Hello and welcome to another Premier League preview podcast exclusively for you guys here on Patreon. As always, I'm joined by Lewis Ambrose. Good afternoon, Lewis.
Good afternoon, Andrew. How are you?
I'm all right, thank you very much. How's it going at your end? We just had some thunder before we came on air, so if there is any deep rumbling in the background, it is got nothing to do with either of our stomachs. It is indeed the weather in Berlin that you're looking out at right now.
I was going to say, I did have lunch, so yeah, it won't be that.
I had chili, so you know, it could be that, but it's not. It is definitely the thunder. So.
It's funny though, isn't it? Like recorded, because I just asked you before we started recording if you could hear that, and because you never know exactly what's coming across. Yeah, so apologies if that's annoying for anybody.
I'm sure.
It's the sound of a successful Europa League campaign coming from the distance.
Well, look, if we were able to control nature and the elements itself, Arsenal would have been a lot more successful in the last number of years. You know, simply for the fact that I would have struck a lot of our opposition with lightning at key moments in key games. Not all of them all the time. You know, you need to keep it within reason. But yeah,
that would be boring, wouldn't it? Just do it all the time.
All the time. Yeah, just, oh, look, Harry Kane is going through on goal. There. Oh, he's all charred to a crisp. What a shame.
Well, Harry Kane, you might do it a little bit more regularly to him.
I mean, yeah.
The old lightning doesn't strike twice. No, with Harry Kane, it would strike 7, 8, 9, 10 times a season.
A day. I would just do it like right even when he wasn't playing. He's just walking down the street. He's there with his family going along. All of a sudden, fuck. Why does this keep happening to me?
I was going to say, maybe that's why he sounds the way he does. Maybe that did happen to him once,
but not enough times. I think that's what we're getting down to. Anyway, you mentioned Europa League and the draw for the Europa League group stage took place today. Arsenal in a group with PSV Eindhoven, FC Zurich, and Bodo Glimt. My apologies to any Bodo Glimt natives if I've mispronounced that. And interestingly, the only team we've played before in European competition is, of course, PSV Eindhoven, which we played in the Champions League back in 2007. That was that game when Alex scored, didn't he, for PSV Eindhoven?
Yeah, not a great one to remember.
No. I tell you why I remember it well though. Is I went to that game with my dad. Actually, weirdly, it was the only Arsenal game we went to together. I don't know why we were in London. I think we had to go and do something else. There was a game. I don't know if we just came over for a game. Anyway, but it was quite funny. We ended up back in the Tollington afterwards. You know, which is where you drink away your. Regrets about the game, and he seemed to have a good time in there talking to many of the Arsblog faithful. So that's how I remember PSV Eindhoven. They are managed by Ruud van Nistelrooy, right?
Yeah, speaking of men that you would gleefully strike with lightning.
There's another one. Okay, still I would do it. Like, I haven't thought of Ruud van Nistelrooy in, like, I don't know, 10 years. I haven't seen Ruud van Nistelrooy in probably more than that, but the minute you mention his name, I would absolutely have him struck with lightning immediately.
I'm working with the assumption here that when those fixtures come around, I don't think the dates are set yet, are they, for those games?
Not quite.
But when they do come around, I'm just going to go out on a limb and guess that Ruud van Nistelrooy and some sort of bubbling hatred for Ruud van Nistelrooy is going to surface on the blog at some point.
Maybe so. I'm sure there will be, like, in the press conferences, you must remember all your old battles with Arsenal, and he'll say, yes, this was a great time, of course, two great rivalries, two great teams. Patrick Vieira hated me. I never outscored Thierry Henry. Those kinds of things might come up in his press conference, I think.
Yeah, well, hopefully. It would be nice, wouldn't it, if the journalists just remind him of how many golden boots he didn't win. Yeah.
There goes my chili. Yeah.
How many golden boots he didn't win because he was playing in the same league as Thierry Henry.
Yeah.
That would be quite nice if he was reminded of that. And it would be very, very nice if we could send him packing on the back of some enormous defeat. I mean, PSV just got... They're only in the Europa League because they just lost the playoff round to Rangers for the Champions League. So
right.
I don't think, famous last words, but you'd go from those results and think that there's not too much for us to fear, maybe, coming up against them in the group stage and them as the seed or the second pot team as well. So, yeah, it'll be an interesting one. I think we've had much easier Europa League groups. I think when we talked about, you know, playing the kids and we get to see, Reece Nelson and Joe Willock bedded into the side, there might be a little bit less of that because I think we have had maybe slightly friendlier Europa League groups, but at least there are no trips all the way over to Eastern Europe.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, the travel isn't too bad, is it? I mean, obviously you're heading towards the Arctic Circle when you're going to... Norway. Norway, of course.
Norway.
My apologies to all our Norwegian listeners. I'm very, very sorry. I know we have many of you here, and I feel like I've let your country down right there. I just couldn't think of the word Norway. I knew where it was. I just couldn't think of the word Norway. Maybe this will go down as the first sign of my fucking impending
They're going to that someone at Bodo Glimt's going to have that up in the dressing room, just that clip of you struggling to remember the name of Norway.
He doesn't even know where Norway is.
Mikel Arteta with his even Tony tweet, that'll be there. They'll be playing it on loop.
Well, look, I mean, it is going to be interesting because October is pretty busy. I think there's something like 9 games potentially in October when you look at the fixture list. So October is Tottenham at home, Liverpool at home, Leeds away, Manchester City away, Southampton away, Nottingham Forest away, and then 3 Europa League games in the mix there as well. So this settled team that we've had, this settled side that we've had in the first few games, it is going to have to change because there's no way you can keep playing the same players over and over and over again. And obviously the Europa League group stages are a chance, are a way of making sure that your players get plenty of minutes.
Yeah, and there'll be injuries. Presumably at some point there'll be injuries anyway, but especially if we did keep playing the same team in every game, you're going to pick up injuries or suspensions at some point. Mm. So I think it's safe to assume that Eddie Nketiah will get the nod and play all of these group stage games. They've signed him down to a nice big new contract and he's not starting any games at the moment. And then, you know, the likes of Kieran Tierney and Tomiyasu and Emile Smith Rowe. It's nice, isn't it, to just be able to reel off names that last year were in the first 11 and now they're all options to be in the first 11 rather than players who have to play. I guess we'll see Rob Holding, Mohamed Elneny, Samba Lokonga. So it's a team that played a lot of Premier League football, really.
Yeah.
Even if you make 6, 7, 8 changes, it's a team that played a lot of football for Arsenal last season. Maybe there'll be a new signing before the window closes next week as well, who can come in and strengthen the squad a little bit more. So, yeah, Fabio Vieira, we haven't even mentioned. We've still not seen him. So there'll be a lot of options for Mikel Arteta. And I don't know, it'll be interesting the group stage to see how it goes because we've seen in the past, even in the League Cup, which as a club we've not maybe taken so seriously before, he's put very strong sides out. And whether or not he'll maybe balance, if he has a first 11, right now it looks like he does. I imagine that by mid-October, it won't look like that anymore. Yeah. And, you know, maybe the Leeds game, a couple of players drop out so they can play whatever Europa League game was a few days before or a few days after. So it'll be interesting to see how he deals with that. Also for him as a challenge, because he's never really, and nobody's had to this extent, but he's never really had to deal with that too much as Arsenal manager. That first full season was obviously a little bit condensed and we were in Europe.
Mm.
But we didn't have the same ambition, I don't think, or level of performances as we're showing at the moment. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, sometimes you might have to prioritise. You know, you've dropped points in the group stage, you might have to put a stronger side out, or you've dropped points in the league, or you're going for something in the league and you can't really afford to rest people when you go to Southampton or play Leeds. So how he juggles that challenge will be interesting, because I think we said last week we wouldn't be surprised. And in the end, we weren't surprised if he named the exact same 11 at Bournemouth, because when he's had an idea that's worked and players have been doing well, he doesn't tend to change too much.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to have to. I mean, that's the reality of this season. He is going to have to work that in. I've just gone back to have a look at some of the teams that we played, you know, in the group stages of the Europa League in that season, after we won the FA Cup. So the first game away was at Rapid Vienna. We won 2-1, and the team was Leno, Gabriel, Cedric, David Luiz, Kolasinac, Saka, Partey, Elneny, Lacazette, Pepe, and Nketiah. And maybe that's because of the quality of the opposition. Slightly less when we played against Dundalk and also Molde, who are definitely in Norway as well. Just for the record, I do remember that. Thank you very much, guys. And the team we played against Molde was Leno, Mustafi, Luiz, Kolasinac, Ceballos, Maitland-Niles, Willock, Xhaka, Willian, Nicolas Pepe, and Eddie Nketiah. So he did shift things around a little bit, but I don't think, you know, this season, you know, he's building a squad and has built a squad, which I think is a little more deep, a little more robust, and he does have the ability to do it. And I think as well, you know, some players that we're talking about from a fringe perspective, but they need first team minutes. Someone like Emile Smith Rowe, for example, you know, to get himself back up to speed. Someone like Fabio Vieira, you know, to come in and start pushing for places. You need to play, and you know, they've got to, you know, make sure they give the manager something to think about when they do get in the team.
Yeah, otherwise we're going to be left at some point in a situation, especially when so many of the players will be going to the World Cup and playing for that entire month as well. We're going to at some point be left in a position where, you know, we ask someone to come into the team and they basically haven't played at all. You think of Mohamed Elneny, for example. Obviously, both of our midfielders are going to be at the World Cup, or you'd expect them to be at the World Cup in the winter. And then they're going to come straight back and there's a game on Boxing Day. And then there'll be more games. There'll be an FA Cup game. There'll be a New Year's Day game. Mohamed Elneny is going to be sat at home or, you know, in the gym or whatever during the World Cup. He's not going to be there. So that's an opportunity for him to come in and play some football. But you don't want him to come in and play, having not played any football really since May. He's going to have to play some of these, definitely these European League group stage games and probably the odd league game and League Cup games as well, obviously, between now and the end of the year. So we're approaching that point now where some of those decisions are going to have to be made. I think the first group stage game is about a week into September. So we're only 2 weeks away now from the Europa League kicking off. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see what sort of lineup we get. And maybe that changes as the group stage goes on and we have a certain number of points as well. But yeah, we'll see. I don't think it's an easy group, or not as easy as it could be. I think the champions of Switzerland, Bodo Glimt, I think nobody outside of Norway maybe had heard of them until a year ago, and then they battered Roma,
in the
Europa League or Conference League last season in the group stage, and they knocked Celtic out as well in the knockout rounds. So, you know, I wouldn't exactly say they have European pedigree, but I don't think you can take them as lightly as we maybe took Dundalk, for example.
No, I mean, I think that's probably fair, with apologies to any of our County Louth listeners this afternoon. I mean, they did have great results. And look, this is part of the challenge, and this is what these guys are going to have to get themselves up for. Mikel Arteta met the press today, spoke a bit about Nicolas Pepe, saying that Pepe was adamant that he wanted to go, adamant that he wanted to play. And he said, I couldn't guarantee him that he had those minutes. So a decent move for him to Nice. And then the question, of course, is like, are we going to replace him in the squad with a new signing? And we've heard about Pedro Neto. And he talked about the transfer market in general. And he said, you look at the players that are coming, the amount of money spent, the level that the squads already have and what they are adding. It's something I haven't experienced in this league. You saw yesterday a few of the transfers that happened, and what is still going to happen in the last week or so, I think is going to be really powerful. Do you think he's talking about what the other Premier League clubs are going to do, or what Arsenal are going to do? I mean, my sense of that quote is like, he is expecting big money to be spent by some clubs in the Premier League before the deadline. think we're trying. I think we want to try, but I don't necessarily think he is saying what Arsenal are going to do will be powerful.
Yeah, me too. I think it's obvious, right, that he would like to sign somebody.
Mm.
But you can see it already, that quote being held against him when we don't sign anybody in the next week. Yeah, I'm pretty sure he was talking much, much more generally about the league and the transfer window. And even today you've seen, you know, Alexander Isak, who we were obviously linked with quite heavily in January, has gone to Newcastle for 70 million euros, I think.
Is that finished? And, is that completed?
Yeah. I saw Newcastle, I think, in the last couple of hours announce that. West Ham apparently had a bid accepted now for Lucas Paqueta, sort of the region of, I don't know, 60 million euros, something like that. It's incredible, really, the power, to use that word, that the league has now, that it's not just City or Chelsea or United obviously spending that sort of money.
Yeah.
But you go, and then you go beyond us and maybe Liverpool and Tottenham as well, but you're getting to Newcastle and West Ham. Leicester haven't made a signing all summer. I don't really understand what's going on there, if they're in financial trouble.
Something's up there, isn't it? You can see that.
I think that they have to do something before the window closes. They've looked horrible at the start of the season as well, so
Maitland-Niles,
you'd imagine something will happen.
Maitland-Niles to Leicester. I put my flag in the Maitland-Niles to Leicester moon
on
right
loan,
here.
Obviously.
Of course. I mean, we couldn't sell him. Why would we do that? We can't.
No chance. I'm sure we'll see a lot. And obviously, you know, Casemiro's now joined United. I'd be surprised if Man United didn't do anything else between now and the end of the window. They're still bidding 100 million or whatever it is for the Antony from Ajax. So I'm sure that we will see lots of other business. I mean, Liverpool keep insisting they're not going to sign anybody, but you watch them on Monday night and you think,
yeah, they need someone, don't they?
Best idea.
Yeah.
James Milner still starting games in midfield might not be the brightest idea for the rest of the season.
I mean, I'm very surprised because Liverpool, in terms of the, you know, the famous net spend, if you like, is quite low this summer because they sold, you know, I know they brought in Darwin Nunez, like
a bunch of guys for like okay fees, right? And then it all adds up, like Minamino and Nico Williams and all of these sorts of players.
Yeah, there was one the other day, it put like what happens with us into a little bit of stark contrast. It was like Manchester United would be willing to accept 20 million for fucking, I don't know this guy's name. Anthony Gardner, is that his name?
James Garner? James was on loan with Nottingham Forest last season.
Right, never heard of him. And they're like, we'll take 20. I'm going, what? What is going on here? How are clubs doing this? What is happening? We need to sort our shit out when it comes to sales. But I'm just looking
We need to figure out who's going to get promoted from the Championship and just make sure a couple of our unwanted 20-year-olds end up on loan there.
Yeah. I'm just looking at Liverpool. So they've spent 77 million and they've brought in something like 72 million. So Mane, Nico Williams, Minamino, some guy called Marco Grujic. I never heard of him.
How much has he sold for?
Apparently 8 million to Porto. Who is that? That's just made up. I don't believe this guy actually exists. No chance whatsoever that this guy I've never seen him once play for Liverpool.
I've never seen him play for Liverpool. I think, was he on loan at Porto last season? I saw him play in the Bundesliga on loan a couple of years ago, I think for Hertha.
Right.
In Berlin.
So he does exist.
There was nothing interesting about him, though. There was not 8 million euros or pounds worth of football there. Definitely not.
Wow. Okay. Well, I feel depressed now that some guy who
was it. Do you remember last, or was it 2 years ago when they had that really mad injury crisis and they were losing every week and they signed a defender? I think it's Ben Davies, the Tottenham Ben Davies, but from a guy from Preston. And I'm pretty sure they've sold him for a profit without him ever playing a second of football for Liverpool.
He never played.
I don't think he ever got on the pitch and he was there for like 18 months. I don't know if they sold him this summer or if they sold him in January or something.
Right.
I'm pretty sure they ended up selling him.
He's gone back to Rangers. Yeah, he never made an appearance.
Yeah, and they sold him. I'm sure they sold him for more than they bought him for. He just didn't play football for 18 months. It's amazing what it can do for your reputation. I wonder how much I could be sold for in this market, because I also can't get in the Liverpool team.
I mean, at least more than we got for Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, I would say.
What's happened there, by the way? Like, we had to pay him so that another club could take him for free, but now somebody's willing to pay 20 million or whatever it's going to be try and sign him this summer. How's that ended up happening?
Oh, listen, don't ask me. We're good at buying things. We're just not very good at selling things. If we had a magazine, it would be buy and loan rather than buy and sell. Our classifieds.
Damaged goods only.
Yeah. My goodness. Yeah, Liverpool bought him for 2.7 million, this Ben Davies guy. They've sold him for 4 million to Rangers. I mean, there's some kind of alchemy going on here, which I'm not fond of. Anyway, look, we'll wait and see. Would you take Pedro Neto? Is that the guy that you think will completely round out the squad?
I'd take him or someone like him, I think. All of these questions obviously always get baked into it, like the fee and the injury. I know he had an ACL.
It wasn't an ACL. He broke his kneecap.
Was it not an ACL?
I think he broke his
kneecap. That's an unusual injury.
It is.
Sorry, I thought it was his ACL. That sounds less long-term, less concerning long-term, I guess, than a torn ACL, which we obviously have seen so many times. Players do that once and maybe don't have explosiveness when they come back, or they do it another time. I think he's really, really good. I enjoy watching him. I think it's some feat to be a player who's enjoyable to watch, playing for Wolves, and not just Wolves now, but Wolves under Nuno Espirito Santo as well, who were even more drab, I would say, than this iteration. And then he was probably the player that added, quite often the player that added a lot of spark to that team. So I would be excited. I would be very interested to see him. Obviously, if you can sign him for 40 or 50 million, it's one thing. And if Wolves demand 60 or 70 million, then it becomes a little bit of a different question. And you start to wonder what else is out there for that sort of money. But they've got a type, haven't they, this last year or so. They want players who have played in the Premier League and don't have to acclimatize to the league or the country and the language, whatever it may be. They want players who they know will arrive and they can already take a pretty good stab at whether or not they'll be a success, because they've seen them play in England. So it doesn't surprise me so much that he's the target. I am a little bit suspicious that there's no other names at all being mentioned, because we've had a few signings, haven't we, the last couple of years that have come a little bit out of nowhere. Mm. And if the fee is prohibitive, I don't know about you, if you think that will be it, it'll be him or nothing, or if you think they've maybe got a plan B that none of us have heard about yet.
I don't know. I mean, I saw a link. The one I was talking to on the Arsecast Extra to James, and I was saying, did I dream it? I thought I saw us linked with quite an exciting player. And it's the guy who plays for... Does he play... No, he can't play for... Who does he play for? Shakhtar Donetsk.
I'm not even going to try and say his name.
Mikhailo Mudryk.
That sounded pretty good.
Sounded pretty good. Apologies to all our Ukrainian listeners, because I'm sure it wasn't. Left winger, really, really fast. Maybe a bit raw, but potentially a lot cheaper than Pedro Neto.
But yeah, that could be interesting.
Because you've got the Wolves tax, the George Mendes tax, the Premier League tax, all of those things that go into the Pedro Neto, when they all add up. Yeah.
The energy bills. I think we've also been linked to Cody Gakpo, haven't we, who now we're in the same Europa League group as him, of PSV.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm always extremely suspicious of signing players from the Dutch league. We've seen that turn out horribly a hell of a lot of times, not for us necessarily, but for... And not even just English clubs, but I think clubs in any league, really, bigger than the Eredivisie. So I'd be a little bit cautious there. The guy from Shakhtar, like probably a lot of people, have not watched him, but watched a couple of videos. And in videos, he obviously looks like a very exciting player.
Yeah.
So yeah, maybe. I hope that they've got another option up their sleeve if they decide that Pedro Neto is too expensive, because I think it would be a shame to now go into the season, having the way we've started the season, to now end on that note where Pepe leaves and we don't bring anybody in for the squad depth.
Yeah. I mean, that is the thing. It's that right-hand side, or, you know, I mean, that's the thing. Do you move Martinelli over? Do you move Smith Rowe over? How do you provide that backup for Bukayo Saka when he's not playing? And who plays there on the right in the Europa League group games will be quite interesting to see, and we'll get a better idea of that, obviously, in a couple of weeks' time. We should talk Fulham, though, because that's who we're playing tomorrow. We finally got round to previewing the actual Fulham game. You know, on paper, we've won three. We've performed well, played well, made lots of chances, scored plenty of goals. But Fulham have had the kind of start to the season that suggests this is going to have to be a game that we pay a fair amount of attention to. And I suppose from the opposition perspective, the big threat is Alexander Mitrovic. Very good in the air, very powerful in the air. And the question of who he attaches himself to on Saturday is going to be very, very interesting. And we might talk about that from the Arsenal perspective first, but he is a player who can cause teams problems, scored a great winner against Brentford last weekend. He scored against Fulham, or scored two against Liverpool. One was a penalty, but one was a very, very good header at the back post where he climbed above the right back. So, I mean, he is clearly the danger man.
Yeah, I think even in that, you know, say the other goal against Liverpool was a penalty, but he won the penalty too. He drove drove with the ball 20, 25 yards into the box and went past and tempted Virgil van Dijk to stick a leg out. So there's a bit more to his game, I think, than just being in the box as well. And you see the header last week against Brentford was almost identical, peeling off to the right back area and getting above the Brentford right back or the right-sided centre-back, I don't know who it was, the same way that he got above Alexander-Arnold in that opening game of the season. So, yeah, over 40 goals, I think, in the Championship last season.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's a goal a game, pretty much. He's obviously the threat. And I find it quite interesting. People say that he's done this a few times, scored a lot in the Championship and come up and then not scored so many goals. But I think if you look at a lot of the time when he'd been in the Premier League, he didn't play all that much. I think at Newcastle, Rafa Benitez didn't like him and sold him. And then I think there was one season where he did play a fair bit and didn't really score many goals for Fulham. But there was another season where he got sort of 10 goals or so, and he only started half the games. Mm. So it's not a terrible return. It's definitely not. We see strikers come up all the time, I guess, who score 30-odd goals in the Championship and then score 6 or 7 in the league, and then you never see them or hear about them ever again. I don't think Mitrovic is that at all. Dwight Gayle, I guess, sticks out as one of those players.
Yeah,
doing that over and over.
But they're often playing for teams, you know, who have scraped through the playoffs, perhaps, or come up, you know, from the Championship and had a really great season, but are nowhere near ready for Premier League, or, you know, they don't have the squad depth or the quality for the Premier League to provide chances for a striker
of that,
you know, the sort of consistency of chances that you need. You know, every striker, as we know, even the best ones are going to miss chances. But when you only get, I mean, it goes back to like a whole discussion we used to have about Aubameyang. Oh, he missed the chance, big chance. But if he was only getting one chance in a game, the miss becomes more glaring. And I think that's sort of true of teams like that come up. They really don't have that level of consistency in attack, you know.
Or even when they do, maybe they sit back a bit and don't really try to attack too often because they're too worried about what's going to happen at the other end of the pitch. I mean, Fulham have come up and they've made it pretty obvious that they're not worried about that, that their strength is scoring goals. I think they scored more than 100 in the Championship last season coming up, obviously with Mitrovic leading the way. And they're going to lean into that strength. They went after Liverpool. I think that stunned everybody, the way that they went at Liverpool. I don't know if you watched that game.
Yeah, I did, actually. Yeah,
it was that good. Early Saturday kickoff. And it was obviously quite nice. We'd won on Friday night, and then it was like the first weekend of the season, and sat down and thought quite quickly, fucking hell, like Fulham are actually going for it here against Liverpool. So you know, they did that. They scored three last week against Brentford. I think even their other game, they drew 0-0 with Wolves, but they missed a penalty in that one. So they've come up, and I think it was match of the day last week. I saw Marco Silva saying that obviously we have to be a bit wary and cautious and not gung-ho, but we're going to play to our strengths. And our strengths are that we came up attacking teams and we're going to attack teams again because that's what got us here in the first place.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think we'd also be facing a different Fulham this weekend if they'd have, maybe they'd picked up 1 point or something from the first three games. The fact that they come into this one with top of the league, three wins, and they've got, 5 points themselves. Yeah. They've not lost yet. It's a complete free hit for them. They can come and have a go and basically roll the dice and see what happens. And if they get sent packing with a 2 or 3 goal defeat, then they won't mind too much, I don't think. They're going to want to come and have a go at us and be able to go away tomorrow evening saying that they went and they tried to throw a few punches. So we're not going to have an easy ride of it, I don't think.
No, I think that's right. I mean, the one thing you might say is that it might well play into, not play into our hands, but I think we find it easier to express ourselves against a team that is willing to play and willing to come out and have a go, that you can move around the pitch, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, you don't want to let them get any momentum. You don't want to let them get ahead. But I'd prefer to play a team that is looking to play themselves and one that is just going to sit and park the bus and the whole lot. I mean, on Mitrovic again, and the threat that he poses, do you envisage any potential changes to the side for this particular game? Because we do have a midweek game as well. We've got a game against Aston Villa on Wednesday, followed by a trip to Old Trafford on Sunday. So we're dipping our toes into the waters of rotation here, because, you know, I think he does have to think about how he keeps people fresh, how he keeps people motivated, keep them interested, all of that kind of stuff. I wonder, would maybe Tomiyasu come in at right back? Because we saw Mitrovic scored against Liverpool. He got all over Trent. I can't remember the defender that he got over for the winning goal, but it was at the back post in the vague area.
The same position.
Where the right back, you know, would be. And look, Ben White, if he plays at right back, is not Cedric, right? He's not that 5'9". I know, I just mean physically, he's not like a 5'9", short little fullback guy. He's, you know, he's fairly big. But Tomiyasu gives you that bit of presence as well in that position. And I wonder if when they're thinking about A, Mitrovic, B, maybe William Saliba's, I don't mean to say he's weak in the air, but I don't think he's as good in the air as he is with the ball at his feet and reading the game. I think, you know, those are his big, big strengths. And I think perhaps his aerial, you know, for a guy of his size, isn't quite as dominant yet aerially as you would like him to be. So it might play into the way Mikel Arteta thinks about this team that he picks.
That does seem to be with Saliba the obvious area for improvement that everybody mentions. I wonder if there wasn't such euphoria last weekend, if he'd even be the one to miss out. I find that hard to imagine now, after he started his Arsenal career 3 years later, so well and played so well. And obviously last weekend got the goal and everybody was singing his name for 90 minutes. I sort of questioned that myself, if he would have been the one to drop out and you would have played Ben White and Tomiyasu outside him. For this one, because of that Mitrovic question. As it is, I don't know. It's a long time since Tomiyasu played football and started a football match. And
he's come on in the last two games, though, hasn't he? So
but it's, I don't know. I think it's a little bit different. And I thought Ben White played really well again last weekend. I imagine that, again, as long as we've had this week break between games, Mikel Arteta will be inclined to go with the same team and trust the team that have won three games so far. Mm. And maybe Villa and United, as you say, two tricky games and two away games too, over the course of the next week. Maybe we'll see a change or two for those ones.
Yeah,
I reckon we'll see the same team again. I don't know. I don't think there's a wrong choice, really, as well. I think that's a little bit the luxury that we have, having won the first three games. That sort of pressure's off. And if you do make a change, do rotate a little bit, then nobody's going to question why that is. Everybody knows nobody's been dropped. There's no Twitter freak out because, Saliba's been dropped. Arteta obviously hates him. You will avoid any of that, and it can sort of be put down to just regular, sensible rotation. So it'll be interesting. I don't know about you. I reckon we'll see the same team again, and we'll say, let's lean into our strengths instead of worrying too much about their...
I mean, but does that mean you rotate for Aston Villa before you go to Old Trafford? I mean, you do have five subs, so you've got the ability to give guys plenty of minutes. And just while you were talking there, I just went very quickly onto Y-Scout to look up the aerial duels stats from last season, right? William Saliba won 59% of his aerial duels. Ben White won 57%, and Tomiyasu won 50%. So maybe we're worrying over nothing here when it comes to that aspect of William Saliba's game. He seems to be there or thereabouts in terms of you know how he performs with that particular metric. But you do. I mean, can you play the same team against Fulham? The same team against, you know, if they do well. Do you keep faith and play the same team against Villa and then play, you know, if they do well, play the same team against Man United? I think the thing for Mikel Arteta this season is going to be how he sells the idea of rotation to the collective. And what is it for? What is the purpose of rotation? It's not to punish you if you don't play. It's to make sure that everybody wins by making sure the team is as strong as it can be and everyone stays as fresh as it can be. But of course, when you're a footballer and you're a top level footballer, you want to play. You want to play in every single game. So it is going to be a challenge for him to decide how and when he's going to do it. Like if we had a week between games, between sort of the Fulham game and the United game, I'd be absolutely on board with changing nothing. But I just wonder if we might see one or two little tweaks to the team. I'm not sure what they might be, but I just wonder.
And you would rather do it now than, I guess, away against Villa on Wednesday night. You'd rather take that chance.
It's home against Villa.
Not that it's a chance. Is it home against Villa?
It's home against Villa. I'm almost positive. It's at home against Villa as well. So we've two home games before we go to Old Trafford. So there is that little bit of a cushion as well when you're rotating and you're at home. That just gives you maybe a little more, I don't know what the word I'm trying to say here is. But you know what I mean? That like it's easier to rotate at home than it is away, I think.
Yeah, you don't worry too much that the game maybe gets away from you in the first half. And obviously you're not going to have a crowd that's on your back. And the other team's probably going to be a little bit more defensive as well. It'll be interesting. I think, you know, we have the depth now, and that's the important thing. We don't have a first 11, really. We have 15 or 14 players who can all play in the first 11. And that could mean, Tierney or Tomiyasu or Emile Smith-Rowe comes in for this game or for the Villa game. And then you'd have a few fresher legs at least for United next Sunday, which obviously when you look at these three fixtures and these two being at home, then especially, that's the one where you don't want anybody to miss in.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, look, we'll see what he does. Obviously, the momentum, you want to keep that going. You want to keep the start of the season going. Old Trafford is always a difficult game, but if you can go to Old Trafford on the back of two good home wins, you know, you do feel that confidence, that bit of momentum. We don't know what United will do. Obviously, they'll be boosted by the win they had over Liverpool. But yeah, let's keep fingers crossed that we can do the job tomorrow against Fulham, right?
And it's just a massive, after such a nice start to the season, it's such a massive chance to be, you know, 3, 4, 5 wins on the bounce to kick the season off, which, you know, obviously there are all the parallels to last season. But on top of that, you look at the way Liverpool have started and the way Man United have started, and the bigger the gap we can grow between us and any of those teams between now and maybe some of the bigger fixtures arriving is incredibly welcome.
Yeah, for sure, because you know it is a relatively kind start to the fixture list, but you've got to play the hard games at some point, and that will mean that some of those hard games come together. As we saw, as I mentioned earlier, at the start of October, it's Spurs and then Liverpool. So there's a week that will test
us. And Man City, I think it's Spurs, Liverpool, and then maybe there's a midweek one in between, and then it's Man City. So going into that sort of week or two with a bit of a cushion would be very, very welcome.
Yeah, it's Spurs, Liverpool, Leeds, Man City. I don't worry about Man City this time. I think we're going to win that game at home. We're overdue. Should have won it last year. So
that's a weight off my mind.
That's good. Yeah, I'm telling you now, you don't have to worry about it at all. So, all right. Well, look, we'll leave it there for today. As always, Lewis, thank you very much.
Yeah, and fingers crossed for a good weekend.
For sure. And thank you guys for being here. James and I will be here on Monday with an Arsecast Extra. We'll do that for you. We'll also have a new episode of The 30. Myself and Phil will round up the Premier League action for you as well. We'll have to do another one of these on Tuesday, Lewis, because we're playing.
Yeah, it's a podcast today, isn't it?
Yeah, wow. We'll talk to you on Tuesday as we look ahead to the Villa game on Wednesday. For now, though, have yourselves a great weekend, and we will catch you on the next one.